The image of sheep and shepherds comes up in the Bible about 400 times. It's a simple image. We are like sheep, and God is like a shepherd. It's actually where we get our word pastoral from. Now, I'm a city dweller, and because I've been brought up in the city, I tend to think quite warm and fuzzy thoughts about sheep. I think of watching Postman Pat as a kid and just seeing those nice little kind of stone walls and pretty countryside areas. I think of visits to the farm and holding baby lambs. Or you think of that psalm that we just read, you know, the green pastures and the still waters. But when the Bible calls us sheep, it is not a compliment. It is an insult. When the Bible gives us this image, God is not being cute. He's telling us something about the human condition. He's telling us what we're like, and it is not flattering. Sheep are entirely dependent on their shepherd. They just cannot survive for long without him. They don't make smart decisions. They are prone to wander into dangerous places. Now today, most shepherds, certainly in our country, will look after their sheep within fenced areas. So maybe really big fenced areas, but nevertheless there is an area that they have a fence, often electrified, to keep the sheep out and to keep dangerous things, keep sheep from getting out and keep dangerous things from getting in. Whereas in these times, they didn't have that. The shepherds would just go around all over the place with their sheep over huge areas, moving from place to place. And so rather than having a fence to keep them in, it was being close to the shepherd that kept the sheep safe. And sheep lose their way all the time. And unlike other animals, they have a really, really terrible homing instinct as well. When a sheep gets lost, they stay lost. I wonder if you've ever been out on a walk in the countryside and you've just seen a sheep who's lost by themselves, perhaps on the edge of a cliff, or in a ravine, or stuck in a thicket, or just standing there not sure where they are or how to get home. The other thing about sheep is there's no point, just if you see a lost sheep and you're the shepherd, just whistling at them and they'll follow you. So if they're close by, they can recognise your voice, but the only way for a sheep who's lost to come home safely is for the shepherd to pick it up and carry the sheep home. You know, so if you've got a pet dog and the dog's lost, you can whistle and actually the dog knows where you are, they'll be able to find you again. It might be the same for cats as well, but sheep, nothing like that at all. You need to pick up the sheep and carry it. This is the image that the Bible uses to talk about you. We are lost. And without God's love, we are helpless to find our way home, whether we believe in him or not. Every inch of our lives is lived in relation to God. He made us and he created us that we would find our comfort and our joy and our security in him. We are prone to wandering. It's our default. We have a wonky sat-nav in us. Our hearts fixate, don't they, on 1,000 different things. You know, we chase satisfaction and security and happiness in 100 different places. Looks can be really deceptive. From a human perspective, we look at our friends, our neighbours, people we love, and we think, yeah, they're doing okay. And here's the thing, in many ways, they really, really are. You know, many of us have been tremendously blessed by people who we love who are not Christians. They can truly and genuinely bring good things into our lives. They carry the image of God, have all kinds of qualities and beautiful things, but actually from an eternal perspective, without Christ, we are lost because we have turned away from the one relationship the one thing that our hearts were made for. But here's the next part of the image. If we are like a sheep, God is like a shepherd. But the image he gives us is of a very strange kind of shepherd. How would you explain that to your supervisor? If you were being charged with looking after 100 sheep and one of them got lost, and so you decided to jeopardize the safety of the other 99 sheep in order to get the one sheep back. It makes no sense at all, does it? It's crazy. But this is the image that the Bible gives us, because God's love for us, for each of us, is as if we were the only one. He loves each of us as if there was only one of us. It makes no economic sense at all, does it? This parable, if you're a shepherd at the time listening to this story, you'd have spat your tea out and gone, are you crazy? Who would do that? And the answer is, a God who loves each of us as if there was only one of us. It's the only explanation why he would go and do that. And I think this is really challenging to us, because I think we like to think of God, or we often think of God, as if he's passive. Like he's this serene kind of cloud of wisdom hovering above the world, waiting for us to find him. You know, like God is at the top of a mountain, and you're an earnest spiritual searcher might find their way to the top. And you know, God might say something like, you know, well done, you found me. You were looking for enlightenment and you made it. But that's not the image here at all, is it? This torpedoes that image. This is a God who gets wet and muddy out in the dark with his torch, looking for the ones that he loves. So we don't believe in a God, as Christians, of a God who's kind of there when we need him. Well, he is there when we need him, but we don't believe he's simply just there when we need him. We believe in a God who comes out to find us. As Jesus said himself, he says, I came, this is just a few chapters later in Luke 19, I came to seek and save the lost. It's an amazing God. And given what we know about sheep, can we see how useless it would be to give a sheep a PowerPoint presentation about how to get home? Okay, sheep, let me tell you, sheep, this is the way you get home. I'm going to give you a leaflet. And we talk about this, let me give you an example. If you said to the right sheep, I'm going to just show you the way home and you can follow me. We don't, and maybe we sometimes treat Jesus like that. I hear that, or there's versions of it so often. You know, my Christian faith is about trying to follow the example of Jesus. And it's not less than that, but it's so much more than that. That's not Christianity. Trying to be a good person and following the example of Jesus, you're just adding more bricks in your rucksack. You are getting more and more helplessly lost if you try to do that. But if you're a Christian, you'll be able to say, Jesus has carried me home. He's my provider, he's my guide, he's my protector, he's my constant companion. Now another image of what God is like, this is the very end, this is verses 5, 6 and 7. What's his response? So if I had 100 sheep and one of them was lost and I spent all night finding the lost sheep, I think I would be pretty hacked off about it. I'd be really grumpy. I'd probably grab the sheep, and then as soon as I got back, I'd probably just hurl it in with the rest, and then just kind of turn over just to try and think about something different. Like, it's a really bad night. I didn't want to do that. And the image here is just joy and joy and joy. It's joyful for God. He joyfully puts the sheep over his shoulders. You know, this lost, terrified, cold, wet sheep. With his joy, he straps his sheep over his shoulders. Verse 6, when he gets home, he doesn't angrily slump away, sort of see what's on TV and try to forget about it, but in joy he rings up his friends. Literally has a party. He's so happy. He's brought his sheep home. He cannot contain it. Again, he must love that sheep. It's the only way to explain this story, isn't it? And he rings up his friends. And then verse 7, this wonderful way Jesus ties it back to reality. There is rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents. I did that. It brings God the deepest joy to see people turn to him, to see people put their faith and their trust in him. So let's take a step back. Why is Jesus telling this story? And if we go back to verses 1 and 2, we see that the whole of this beautiful image is framed by a muttering. It's a really good word, isn't it, muttering? Jesus is spending time and eating with tax collectors and sinners. So these are the lowest of the low, and I don't know what your equivalents of them would be, but these are the people whose people's stomachs would be a bit turned. They'd be like, really? Them? No, Jesus, you're meant to be a good man. Don't you understand that you're sitting down and you're associating with people like that? So for these Pharisees, for these religious elites, they're meant to be the shepherds of Israel. They're meant to be extending God's love to others, but instead they're kind of playing a religious pride game. And Jesus tells this story to reveal to them just how ungracious their hearts are. So there's one take home for us. We can take this home. God loves even the worst of sinners. So there's no place for a ministry of muttering. There is no place, you know, if you're sort of looking around or thinking about people who you want to be friends with or get annoyed with, you can't go. God, you know, even them, that's out. Gets even further than that, because God is calling us to celebrate, not just tolerate people who we wouldn't think of as being Christians or we wouldn't think of as being good, but to celebrate them as well. But it takes us even further than that. At the very end of Matthew's Gospel, he says to his disciples, the last words he says to them with his own mouth, go and make disciples of all nations. But talking about Jesus is an essential part of being a Christian. It's not an add-on for those of us who are particularly confident or extroverted. And one of the things I think we can do is just recognise how many different shapes that takes. Because we're certainly not talking about Bible bashing, whatever that even means. What we're describing here is, like Jesus does, going out to the last, the least and the lost. Going into the highways and hedges and having purposeful conversations. They can be small. They can be subtle. You know, it takes a great deal of patience, a great deal of wisdom and skill to know how and when, but nevertheless, in those conversations, you're thinking, I want to love this person, and one of the ways I can love them best is by presenting Jesus. So another really good question is, well, why would you risk this? Why would you risk rejection, embarrassment, your friends thinking less of you? Why not just keep your head down and kind of just hope that quietly something about the way you live will rub off and they might come and ask you? Which is, it can happen sometimes, it's not a bad thing, and actually it says a lot of good about that, but why risk the rejection of putting your head above the parapet of our secular world and saying, yes, I'm a Christian, and can I talk about that with you? Until you've grasped, I think, that you also are a rescued sheep, you're not, I don't think, ever really going to do that. And there are lots of really bad reasons to share your faith in Jesus. I think at different points I've been guilty of all of these. How about sharing your faith out of guilt? Sort of just a sense that God won't love me if I don't do that. You know, it's what I'm supposed to do as a Christian. So you kind of feel a sense of guilt, perhaps. Maybe it's peer pressure, you know, because my church friends do it. Now, this is quite big for me when I was a student. I remember well in the Christian Union, sort of various groups of friends I would spend time with, there was a real kind of respect given to people that were openly sharing their faith with their friends. And so a part of me kind of thought, I want to be like them. You know, I want to impress these people, and that's just one bad reason to do it. Or how about condescension? Just enjoying arguing and feeling superior to people. Sometimes people do that. They enjoy sharing their faith because they quite enjoy sort of a conversational punch up, just talking about things, and actually none of those things will last when it gets hard. None of those will last the decades of patient love that those things can take. But the extent that you can grasp that you too are a lost sinner, that there is nothing you can contribute towards your own rescue, but that you are nevertheless infinitely loved and infinitely valued, and that he is carrying you home, he meets the deepest desires and hopes of your heart, then you will go out to the cliff ledges, to the ravines, to the thickets. You won't mind occasional awkwardness, and you certainly won't be condescending or patronizing or belittling or coercing to people who don't think the same way as you. And you too will rejoice when a sinner comes home. In fact, you won't just rejoice when a sinner comes home. If you see just a slight turn in someone, an openness that wasn't there before, or an ability to kind of be able to, willing to tolerate a conversation about faith where a few years ago they weren't, even small things like that will bring you great joy, because you think, actually, I can see something is happening here. And you know, God, our Father in heaven, is far more patient than we are. So what is God like when he carries that sheep in? And he gets back to the fold with his you know, his hands rough and wet, his back covered in mud. He doesn't slump at the wall. He doesn't angrily hurl the sheep back into the fold. He rejoices. He rings up his friend and says, "We need to have a party." So my prayer for me, for this week, for you, for all of us here, is that our hearts would be so melted by this, by the love of our rescuing God, not just this morning, now, for a few minutes, but growing in this love and grace on a scale of days, weeks, months, decades, that we will share something of the shepherd's compassion, and that we too will be inwardly compelled and motivated to talk about Jesus. Amen.